You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire.
Terabit per second DDoS may become the new normal. The real threat in the IoT? A hint, security cameras are to the internet what squirrels are to the power grid. InfoArmor looks into the Yahoo breach and finds more crooks than spies, but the crooks may be fencing data to the spies. Toxic data, sock puppets, security questions, and even Major League Baseball. I'm Dave Bittner in Baltimore with your CyberWire summary for Thursday, September 29th, 2016. The very large distributed denial-of-service attack sustained by investigative journalism site Krebs on Security and French hosting service OVH seem to have abated, but they've shaken confidence in internet users' ability to ride out such attacks. When these DDoS attacks are described as very large, that's perhaps an understatement. Krebs on Security received 620 gigabits per second of attack traffic, which dwarfed what DDoS mitigation specialists at Akamai believe was the former record, set in June 2015. That was 363 gigabits per second. But the OVH attack makes what Krebs on Security suffered look puny. OVH says it was hit with 1.1 terabits per second. Both attacks were conducted through Internet of Things botnets, which is itself very troubling. Many of the devices herded into the botnets were routers and security cameras. Ars Technica says that 145,000 cameras were involved in the attack against OVH. That such devices can be exploited isn't news, nor is it surprising. Security arrived relatively late to the IoT design party, and many of the devices themselves are computationally impoverished, difficult to patch, owned by poorly resourced users, and themselves near, at, or beyond their own end of life, and thus often unpatchable, even if the users were willing and able to do so. Consider security cameras. We still tend to call them closed circuit, but that hasn't been true for a long time. They're networked. And many of them are securing mom-and-pop businesses. And remember, mom-and-pop work hard, have low margins, no IT staff beyond maybe a kid or a grandkid, and probably can't quite recall how long ago they set that camera up. Mom-and-pop aren't negligent, stupid, or lazy, probably quite the opposite. But you've got to have reasonable expectations about their security awareness and, above all, about their resources. Akamai told Ars Technica that terabit per second attacks may become the new normal. There's been much sensationalist fear, uncertainty, and doubt talked up around the Internet of Things, much of it the beware your refrigerator may be out to kill you, or your coffee pot may have murder in its semiconducting heart. But here's the real near-term issue. Poorly secured but well-networked IoT devices can be herded into DDoS botnets that can take down significant portions of the grid. There's an analogy here to vulnerabilities in other kinds of networks. We hear much, for example, of the risk that the electrical power grid could be hacked, and the disparate nature of the power grid, which we've heard people from NERC describe as a hodgepodge, and they mean that in a good, resilient way. A hodgepodge is difficult to take down across a country or a continent. So an ice storm, a failed transformer, or even a misplaced squirrel or snake won't take out a continental grid. But storms, squirrels, and snakes can still have major local or even regional effect. So can attackers. The other network people in the United States at any rate are worrying about is the network, or more properly networks, used to conduct voting. This one really is too disparate to count as a single grid or anything remotely resembling a system of systems. It's a mix of online, air-gapped electric, and manual systems, all run by each of the 50 states. The FBI has warned Congress this week that there may have been more, presumably Russian, attempts to access state voter registration databases. The FBI is also investigating an apparent Russian attempt on Democratic Party politicians' phones. Thomas Poor of Plixer commented to the CyberWire that we need to remember how much we've come to depend upon our phones for our connection to work. Campaign staffers and party officials are no different, he observed. Embarrassing leaks are one thing, but there is even more sensitive information on the phones than that. Quote, phones of staffers also contain real-time information sources such as GPS coordinates, microphones, and cameras for surveillance opportunities, end quote. Content delivery networks are an effective way of increasing the performance of your website, but they're not without risks. We checked in with Farah Madvituna from NetSparker about the security of CDNs and protecting them with sub-resource integrity checks.
CDN as a concept became quite popular recently. We had Amazon kind of delivery networks, and we have so many other delivery networks. People use them either for performance or just simply, you know, include a JavaScript from a well-known content delivery network to hope that their visitors have that content in their cache, and therefore their website will be faster.
So what are some of the security issues when it comes to content delivery networks?
The problem with content delivery network, you effectively trust a third party. We talk about vulnerabilities such as cross-site scripting. When an attacker can execute JavaScript on your website, that effectively means when you trust a third party to deliver your JavaScript, you completely trust it. Because if this third party by themselves, or if they got hacked and changed the content of this file, they can start executing JavaScript on your website. And that means they now there is a cross-site scripting. And even though your website is completely secure, you have done everything in your power, you get pen tested, you have done everything. But because your content delivery network got hacked, you get hacked automatically. And the nature of these trust relationships obviously also makes content delivery networks is a prime target for attackers. Because if you can hack a content delivery network, now you hacked thousands of websites. By design, you know, you control here, you can put something in there, and it will get executed in thousands of websites.
So describe to me, what is sub-resource integrity, SRI?
So sub-resource integrity, so the way it works, it's supported on the browsers, so it's a client-side protection. So with sub-resource integrity, while including a reference such as a JavaScript file, such as a jQuery library, you say, okay, here is the content of this library. Here is the hash of it, which is like a signature of this file. And if any part of it, even if it's one character of that content is changed, that signature will be changed. So you create that signature by hashing it. And then in your website, you say, okay, get jQuery library from this content delivery network, and the signature must be this. Now, when your browser calls that JavaScript library, it checks the signature. If the signature of that file doesn't match to what you are expecting, what you are declaring while calling that file, browser will not load that file. But by doing so, by providing this signature, you will make your website secure against this threat.
That's Farah Mavituna from NetSparker. InfoArmor has published an extensive report on the Yahoo breach. They conclude that two distinct criminal hacking groups were involved, along with a third black market reseller. The groups that stole the data, InfoArmor says, sold them at least three times, once to a state-sponsored actor. It's worth noting that state-sponsored can include a wide variety of groups in addition to government agencies and services themselves. Sympathizers, activists, terrorist organizations, crime syndicates, and an array of hired guns can all, under the right circumstances, legitimately be considered state-sponsored. Thus, criminal and state-sponsored are far from mutually exclusive, and states are using more fronts and cutouts in cyberspace in an updated form of traditional information operations and espionage tradecraft. Finally, we turn to one more lesson being drawn from the Yahoo breach. If an organization can avoid collecting names, addresses, mother's maiden names, first pets, the middle school you attended, the name of your favorite baseball player when you were a kid, that would be all the good. Observing the way security questions were compromised in the Yahoo breach, Wired suggests it's time to start telling lies. So we recommend that our editor change his answer from Wad Swoboda to Ed Cranepool. As any old Mets fan would know, both Cranepool and Swoboda were amazing. Besides, probably Marvelous Marv Throneberry is already taken. So as the Major League Baseball wild card race comes down to the wire, we'll just say, let's go Mets. But even more so, how about them O's, hon? We're predicting a rematch of 1969. And I'm joined once again by Dr. Charles Clancy. He's the director of the Hume Center for National Security and Technology at Virginia Tech. Dr. Clancy, I know an area of research for you is software-defined networking. We're talking about that. What do we mean?
Software-defined networking is a relatively new concept. It's sort of come out over the last 5 years. But it's this notion of decoupling the control plane of a network from the data plane of a network. So right now, in a typical enterprise network, and even in the core of the Internet itself, you have things like routing packets that are commingled with user traffic. And this has created sort of a fundamental property of the Internet and networks that we know today. Software-defined networking decouples these two and creates a separate control plane isolated from the data plane, which allows the control plane to actually reconfigure the data plane because it's no longer dependent upon it. This enables a lot of different applications, such as load balancing and traffic engineering, but also fundamental changes in the network topology as a function of real-time traffic that's been observed. So lots of exciting things going on in this community. One particular protocol, OpenFlow, is most commonly associated with software-defined networking and is generally being embraced as at least one standard in this emerging ecosystem.
And so what are some of the security opportunities and challenges that we'll face with this technology?
Well, first I'll talk about the opportunities. By being able to rapidly reconfigure the data plane of your network, there's lots of opportunity for new active defense countermeasures in both enterprise networks and core Internet itself. So this gets to this notion of moving target defense, where the topology of the network and the structure of the network can be constantly changing. So, for example, you may be able to more quickly react to attacks. You may be able to identify a particular distributed denial of service attack that's attacking your network and reconfigure your network to block that traffic at the source rather than at the edge, at the destination. Or you may be able to identify botnets at scale and be able to block command and control channels for botnets. So it gives you one more tool in terms of building an active network defense. On the downside, though, obviously there are new protocols being developed. This control plane is there's not really best practices around how to protect the control plane. In particular, the OpenFlow standard itself, the original standard had TLS as required for security, but the newer versions have made TLS optional, which makes it easier to deploy and easier to provision, but at the expense of potential security. So far, I haven't seen any major intrusions into OpenFlow networks, but if you're able to get access to the OpenFlow controller, then you really have the crown jewels of the network at that point, because that's where all the control for the entire network is happening.
All right, Dr. Charles Clancy, thanks for joining us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening.